All right, let's jump right into this deep dive. Today's topic is the respiratory system.
Wonderful.
Using the listener's research and notes.
Sounds good.
And, you know, the respiratory system, it's so much more than just breathing, isn't it? I mean, it's this incredible system working 24/7, even when we sleep.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, it's really an amazing system that we often take for granted until, you know, something goes wrong with it. But it really is quite elegant.
Yeah. And in your notes, you mentioned a really interesting question about the connection between the upper and lower respiratory tracts. And I was hoping maybe we could start there.
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, the respiratory system is basically divided into those two parts, right?
Yeah.
And they work seamlessly together. The upper respiratory tract is really responsible for conditioning the air that you breathe before it actually reaches the lower respiratory tract, okay, where the magic of gas exchange happens.
Okay. So let's imagine we're taking a journey with the air as we breathe in through the nose.
Okay.
What's the first stop on this adventure?
All right. So the first stop is your nose, of course. And, you know, your nose is a lot more than just a hole in your face.
Yeah.
It's actually lined with these tiny little hairs called cilia. And these cilia act like a filter. They trap dust and other particles that you don't want to get into your lungs. You also have mucus in your nose,
yeah,
which not only helps to trap those particles, but also humidifies the air.
Wow. I never really thought about the nose as an air conditioning system. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is.
So the air is prepped. It's filtered. It's nice and humid. What happens next?
All right. So next, the air travels down the pharynx, which is essentially your throat. And from there, it passes through the larynx, which is also known as the voice box.
Ah, the voice box.
Exactly. And this is where your vocal cords are located.
Okay.
And they're pretty incredible. They vibrate as air passes over them, which creates the sounds that we use for speech and singing.
Oh, so that's why I sound so raspy in the mornings. My vocal cords are still waking up.
Well, maybe. But we'll get into the voice aspect of things a little bit later on. But for now, let's continue following the air down to the trachea, which is also known as the windpipe.
Okay, the windpipe.
And it's reinforced with rings of cartilage. And, you know, you've probably heard of the trachea before, but did you know it's reinforced with rings of cartilage?
Yeah, that makes sense to keep it from collapsing when we bend and twist and move around.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a flexible vacuum hose, strong enough to stay open, but also flexible enough to move with you.
Yeah.
But there is a vulnerable spot.
Oh.
Where the trachea branches into the two bronchi. It's called the carina.
The carina.
And it's super sensitive. Even a light tap there can trigger a coughing fit.
Okay, noted. Do not poke the carina.
Exactly.
Okay, so two bronchi, one for each lung.
Precisely. And just like a tree branching out, the bronchi divide into smaller and smaller tubes called bronchioles.
Bronchioles.
Yes. And these tiny tubes are surrounded by smooth muscle, which can constrict or relax to control airflow. This is actually where things go wrong in conditions like asthma, where the bronchioles become inflamed and constricted, which makes it difficult to breathe.
Ah, that makes sense. So inhalers help to relax those muscles and open up the airways.
Precisely. And finally, at the end of this intricate branching system, we reach the alveoli.
The alveoli.
And these are tiny, delicate air sacs, millions of them, clustered together like grapes. And this is where the real action happens, the exchange of oxygen and carbon dioxide between the lungs and the bloodstream.
So the air has gone through this incredible journey from your nose to the alveoli.
It has.
What happens next?
This is where it gets really interesting.
It does. It really does. But before we dive into the specifics of gas exchange, let's talk about the lungs themselves. You had some questions in your notes about lung volumes.
Yes. You know, like, how much air can our lungs actually hold? Is it like a balloon that just keeps inflating? It's a good question. Not quite. You are right to think about capacity, though. One important measure is what's called vital capacity.
Okay.
And that's the maximum amount of air you can exhale after taking the deepest breath possible.
Wow. I bet freedivers have a really high vital capacity.
They do. They train to maximize it. But there's also what's called residual volume, which is the air that always remains in your lungs, even after you exhale as much as you can.
So we never fully empty our lungs. Why is that?
That's right. It's kind of like a balloon that never completely deflates. And this actually prevents the lungs from collapsing. It also ensures that there's always some air available for gas exchange, even between breaths. Think about scuba diving, for example.
Oh, yeah.
This residual air is really crucial at depth as the pressure changes.
Wow, that's amazing. I never really thought about it like that. Okay, so we have different lung volumes. What about this lung compliance thing I read about?
Yes. So lung compliance basically refers to how easily your lungs can inflate and deflate. You think about it like a rubber band. A compliant lung is stretchy and flexible, while a stiff lung is harder to expand.
So is there an ideal level of compliance? Like, is too stretchy a bad thing?
You got it. It's like Goldilocks.
Yeah.
Our lungs need that just right compliance for optimal function.
Okay.
Too stiff and breathing becomes difficult, too compliant, and they might not recoil effectively to expel air.
So it's all about balance.
Exactly.
I'm starting to see just how complex this whole system is. It's like this delicate dance between structure and pressure and airflow.
It is.
And we haven't even gotten to the gas exchange part yet.
Nope, we haven't. But all of this, the anatomy, the mechanics, the volumes, it all sets the stage for that crucial process of gas exchange, mm-hmm. where oxygen gets into your blood and carbon dioxide gets out.
Okay, well, I'm ready to hear all about that when we come back. Welcome back. All right, so we are in the middle of this amazing journey through the respiratory system, and we've made it to the main event, gas exchange.
We have. It's the grand finale.
This is what it's all about, right?
Absolutely. Mm. Everything we've talked about so far, from the filtering in your nose to the branching of the bronchioles, it all leads up to this moment. The reason we breathe, to get oxygen in and carbon dioxide out.
And all of this happens in those tiny little alveoli we talked about. It's kind of mind-blowing that something so vital happens on such a small scale.
It really is. And, you know, you had a really good question in your research about how efficient this exchange actually is.
Oh, yeah.
So the alveoli are surrounded by this network of tiny blood vessels called capillaries.
Okay, capillaries.
And the walls of both the alveoli and the capillaries are incredibly thin, almost like two pieces of wet tissue paper pressed together.
So thin that oxygen and carbon dioxide can just pass right through.
Exactly. It's all about diffusion.
Yeah.
The movement of molecules from an area of high concentration to low concentration. So the oxygen-rich air in the alveoli diffuses across into the oxygen-poor blood in those capillaries, while carbon dioxide-rich blood diffuses into the alveoli to be exhaled.
Okay, so it's like a two-way street, gases moving in opposite directions at the same time. But how does the body know how much oxygen to take in and how much carbon dioxide to let go of?
That's where things get even more interesting. It's not just about simple diffusion. It's also about partial pressures. So think about it this way. Each gas in a mixture exerts its own pressure, and gases always move from areas of higher partial pressure to areas of lower partial pressure.
Okay, so if the partial pressure of oxygen is higher in the alveoli than it is in the blood, the oxygen will move into the blood. And the opposite is true for carbon dioxide.
Got it. And this whole process is constantly adjusting based on your body's needs.
Oh, wow.
When you exercise, for example, your muscles are working harder and using more oxygen and producing more carbon dioxide. This changes the partial pressures of these gases in your blood, triggering your respiratory system to work harder. You breathe faster and deeper to bring in more oxygen and get rid of more carbon dioxide.
It's like a finely tuned system constantly monitoring and adjusting to keep everything in balance. It's really incredible. That's just amazing. I do have another question, though. How does the oxygen actually get from the lungs to the rest of the body?
Another great question. That's where hemoglobin comes in.
Hemoglobin?
Yeah. It's a protein found in red blood cells, and it acts like a taxi for oxygen, picking it up from the lungs and delivering it to all the tissues that need it.
So the oxygen isn't just floating around freely in the bloodstream?
Nope. It needs a ride. Each hemoglobin molecule can actually bind up to four oxygen molecules, forming what we call oxyhemoglobin.
Okay.
And this bond is relatively loose, which allows the oxygen to be easily released to the tissues where it's needed.
Wow, that's pretty cool. So all of this is happening automatically, right? Without us even having to think about it, we just breathe in and out and the magic happens.
Exactly. It's thanks to our amazing nervous system. It's like the control center for your breathing, making sure everything runs smoothly. We have these special sensors in our body called chemoreceptors, and they're constantly monitoring the levels of oxygen and carbon dioxide and the pH of your blood.
Hold on, pH. What does pH have to do with breathing?
It's all connected. Remember how we talked about carbon dioxide being slightly acidic?
Yeah.
Well, if it builds up in your blood, it can make your blood too acidic, which can be dangerous. Your chemoreceptors detect this change in pH, and they send signals to your brain, which then sends signals to your respiratory muscles, telling them to work harder to get rid of that excess carbon dioxide.
Wow. So breathing isn't just about getting oxygen in. It's also about regulating the pH of our blood.
Exactly. It's a two-for-one deal. And it really highlights how interconnected all of our body systems are.
Yeah.
But let's not forget about the muscles that do the heavy lifting of breathing.
Yeah. Those unsung heroes.
Exactly. So the diaphragm, that big dome-shaped muscle that sits below your lungs, is the star of the show. When it contracts, it flattens out, increasing the volume of your chest cavity, which draws air into your lungs.
Oh, so we're not actually sucking air in, we're creating space for it to flow in. That's kind of counterintuitive.
It is. And then we have the intercostal muscles, which run between your ribs, and they help to lift the rib cage up and out, further expanding that chest cavity.
So it's a team effort.
It is.
Yeah.
And when we exhale, those muscles relax, allowing the chest cavity to shrink back down, which forces the air out.
Okay.
And this whole process, the contraction and relaxation of these muscles, is controlled by signals from your brain via the phrenic nerve for the diaphragm and the intercostal nerves for the intercostal muscles. It's a beautiful example of how your nervous system orchestrates this vital function without you even having to think about it.
It really is amazing how much is going on in our bodies without us even realizing it. We're literally breathing life into ourselves with every breath.
You said it. And while most of the time our breathing just happens automatically, we do have some conscious control over it. Think about taking a deep breath, or holding your breath, or even changing your breathing pattern when you speak or sing.
Yeah, that's right. We can override the automatic system to some extent. Like when I do yoga and I'm focusing on my breath and taking those slow, deep breaths, I can actually feel my body relaxing.
Exactly. That's because that conscious breathing can actually influence your nervous system, activating what's called the parasympathetic nervous system, which is responsible for that rest and digest response.
So deep breathing can actually help to calm us down.
It can. It's a very powerful tool. And it highlights another fascinating aspect of breathing, the connection between our breath and our emotions. Have you ever noticed how your breathing changes when you're stressed or anxious or excited?
Oh, absolutely. When I'm anxious, I tend to take short, shallow breaths. And when I'm excited, my breathing gets faster and deeper.
Exactly. Our emotions can directly influence our breathing patterns. And what's even more amazing is that it works both ways. Our breathing can also influence our emotions.
Oh, really?
Yeah. By consciously slowing down and deepening our breath, we can actually calm our nervous system and reduce feelings of stress and anxiety.
So it's like a feedback loop. But this time we have some conscious control over it. We can use our breath to regulate our emotions. That's pretty empowering.
It is. It is. And it brings us to one of the key points that you brought up in your research, the importance of understanding our breathing for our overall well-being. It's not just about getting enough oxygen. It's about how our breathing affects our physical, mental, and emotional health.
It sounds like we've only just scratched the surface of this fascinating connection. There's so much more to explore.
There is. And we'll dive even deeper into that mind-body connection in the final part of our deep dive. We'll explore how breathing affects our voice, how it protects us from harmful invaders, and even how it can be used as a tool to improve our overall health and well-being.
Okay, I am hooked. I can't wait to hear all about that. Welcome back for the final part of our deep dive on the respiratory system. It's been quite a journey so far. We've talked about everything from the anatomy of the airways to the mechanics of breathing and the intricacies of gas exchange. But in your research, you had some really interesting questions about how breathing connects to things like our voice, our immune system, and even our overall well-being.
Absolutely. Those are all really fascinating aspects of how breathing integrates into our daily lives and impacts our health in ways we might not even realize.
Okay, let's start with the voice. We use it constantly, but I bet most of us never really stop to think about how it actually works.
It is pretty remarkable when you break it down.
Yeah.
So remember the larynx we talked about earlier? That structure in your throat that's often called the voice box?
Yeah.
Well, it houses your vocal cords, which are essentially two folds of tissue that vibrate when air passes through them.
So our voice is basically created by vibrating bits of tissue. It seems so simple, but so complex at the same time.
Exactly. The pitch of your voice actually depends on how stretched those vocal cords are.
Right.
When you want a higher pitch muscles in your larynx, pull the cords tighter, making them vibrate faster. And for a lower pitch, they relax a bit.
So it's like tuning a guitar string, and we're constantly adjusting this tension as we speak without even thinking about it.
You got it. And it's not just about speaking either.
Yeah.
Think about singing, laughing, whispering, even shouting. All of these actions involve these subtle changes in airflow and vocal cord tension to create all those different sounds.
That's incredible. And I know you mentioned earlier that the carina, or the trachea branch, is super sensitive. Does that play a role in voice production at all?
Not directly in producing the sound, but it's crucial for protecting your airways.
Mm.
So a cough, for example, is triggered by irritation of the carina. It's that sudden burst of air that helps expel anything that shouldn't be down there.
Right, like if you accidentally inhale a crumb or something, your body's like, nope, get out of here.
Exactly. Coughing, sneezing, even yawning. These are all reflex actions that involve the respiratory system and help to protect it. It's like a built-in defense system.
Speaking of defense systems, you also mentioned a connection between breathing and our immune system. How does that work?
Well, think about it. Every time you inhale, you're not just taking in oxygen. You're also taking in all sorts of stuff that's floating around in the air. Dust, pollen, bacteria, viruses, you name it. So your respiratory system is really your first line of defense against these potential invaders.
Right. We talked about those cilia in the nose filtering out the larger particles. But what about the smaller stuff that gets through?
Well, your body has a few tricks up its sleeves. So first, remember that mucus we talked about.
Yeah.
It's not just there to be annoying. It actually traps those smaller particles and irritants. And the cilia are constantly sweeping it upward out of your lungs and towards your throat, where you can either swallow it or cough it out.
So it's like a little self-cleaning conveyor belt for your lungs.
Precisely. And if something does manage to get past these defenses and reach the alveoli, there's a whole army of immune cells waiting to fight back. These cells, like macrophages, are like little warriors that engulf and destroy harmful bacteria and viruses, keeping your lungs healthy.
So it's a constant battle going on in there.
Oh.
It makes you appreciate how hard your body is working to keep you healthy.
It really does. And this brings us to that fascinating connection between breathing and our overall well-being. You asked in your research about the benefits of deep breathing exercises.
Yeah, I've heard they can be really helpful for stress, but I'm not exactly sure how it all works.
Well, it's all about the interplay between your breath, your nervous system, and your brain. So when you take slow, deep breaths, you activate the parasympathetic nervous system, which is responsible for that rest and digest response. And this actually counteracts the fight or flight response that's triggered by stress, leading to that sense of calm and relaxation.
Ah, so it's like a natural chill pill.
In a way, yes. Deep breathing also increases the amount of oxygen that you take in, which can improve blood flow and lower blood pressure.
That makes sense. And I've definitely noticed that when I focus on my breath, it helps to quiet my mind and feel more centered.
That's a very common experience. Deep breathing can really bring your attention to the present moment, helping to quiet those racing thoughts and reduce anxiety. It's a very simple yet powerful technique that can have a really profound impact on your mental and emotional well-being.
It really is incredible. This has been such an amazing journey, and I feel like I've learned so much and gained a whole new appreciation for my own breathing.
It's pretty amazing, isn't it? The respiratory system is so much more than just breathing. It's essential for life. It shapes our voice, it protects us from harm, and it even influences our mental and emotional state.
And to think it's all happening right now inside each of us without us even having to think about it.
It is. So the next time you take a breath, take a moment to appreciate the incredible symphony of processes happening inside you. It's a true testament to the power and resilience of the human body.
Well said. And to our listener, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the respiratory system. We hope you've learned something new and maybe even gained a new appreciation for this amazing system that keeps us alive.
Keep breathing, keep exploring, and until next time, stay curious.